all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Joining me from Tijuana, Mexico, is Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, here in lovely Tijuana.
Yes. Babalu. Yes. Oh, wait, that's Cuba. Sorry. Also joining us is the ghost of Mike McPadden. Say hello, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
Teen movie. Here I come from teen movie hell.
Oh, I realize they're all bad, and and I'm very woke now, and I realize my mistake.
Oh, poor guy. Poor guy. Gone too soon. And yeah. A guy who's got teen movie hell proudly displayed on his shelf at home, Mr. John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello.
This week, we are doing a movie that Stu picked, a Curtis Hanson film, James Ellroy's favorite filmmaker, Curtis Hanson, and written by B.W.L. Norton, the scribe of such films as More American Graffiti. And that movie is Losing It, starring a young Tom Cruise. It's a movie about, a bunch of young horny teenagers who want to go to Tijuana for some fun. Well, there's two horny teenagers, and then there's Tom Cruise, who doesn't seem nearly as horny. You know why? Because he's a homo. Oh.
He's in the closet, you know?
He's in the closet.
You know what he wanted to do, right? Right? He and Gene Stockwell, they're together, you know.
They're together under the table.
Yeah, you know.
Is together. Is that John's jokes or is that rumored fact?
No, I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
I know that half the cast of this movie, like I think Stockwell and Cruise, I mean, they were both in Top Gun. And
yes, they
apparently
were.
There's some other, like, I think some other cast members or people who worked on this were also in Top Gun. Like,
and also, Tom Cruise and the kid who played Wendell Wimp was in Taps together, which I've never seen Taps. But I've wanted to, but it's a hard film to come by. It's about the military academy, isn't it?
It's not around. It's a hard, it doesn't show up on streams. It never shows up on services or anything. I never see the DVD anywhere.
No.
It's like Sean Penn, Tom Cruise. I think some other guys are in that. So I've never seen it.
Yeah,
but you got Tom Cruise, John Stockwell, and you also have Jackie Earle Haley.
Yeah.
Out of the teenagers, you know, he is the one whose face, if you look at like future Hustler readers of America, he is the perviest looking one out of all of them.
And he was the biggest star in this film.
Oh yeah.
He was a child star. He was the biggest name. The biggest name. But Stu, you picked this. Do you have a certain affinity for these like 70s and 80s sex comedies?
Well, I do, but I'll put a lot on pause until we do our junk, which we need to
Let's do that. Sorry, I was don't forget to announce that, and then I did.
Speaking of teen sex comedy jokes, whip out our junk.
There you go. Well, right. Mine's brief, so I'll go first. Here's one I got. This is a Twilight Time used bin find. Pal Joey, starring Frank Sinatra.
Who is
Rogers
referenced
and
in
Hart
that
musical?
He's referenced in Losing It as well, Frank Sinatra, a few times.
Yeah. If I was Frank Sinatra, would you let me charge? Would you charge me $4? It's based on a Broadway show by Rogers and Hart, and it was the show that made Gene Kelly a big name because he was famous for playing this role, but it's played by Frank here. And my last one, this one will have the John Gray seal of approval, the Arrow Executioner Collection with Sonny Chiba. So pretty excited. Chiba fans been eating good lately on Blu-ray. We got the...
Oh, yeah.
You know, a few years ago, we got the Street Fighter collection, Sister Street Fighter, And recently, it was Shout Factory put out a Sonny Chiba collection with that was very generous.
That's fantastic. That's a great set.
Yes, and then we got this Executioner. I mean, we're just we eating good, John. I think you know we're doing well. Sonny's doing well. His memory lives on.
Did that Sonny Chiba Street Fighter get a full uncut release?
Yeah,
it did.
Okay.
There is a British Blu-ray in the works that will have even more bonus features, supposedly, I've heard.
Of course.
Yeah, I got to say, like, Shout, they put out a lot of good stuff, but they're pretty hit or miss when it comes to stuff that they do with their movies.
Yeah.
You know, like, their Billy Jack set was highly compromised.
Yeah, or, like, putting out Cursed, and they couldn't get the Rick Baker cut.
Can you imagine
whoever owns that movie would just give it to him, you know?
It's I mean, come on, like, let's get the Baker, release the Baker cut.
And everybody was like, is it the Baker cut? And they're like, no, we can't get it. And it's like, well, there's no reason for this to exist then.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Shout would actually be a lot better company if they had quality control overseen by Zolly Becker.
Yeah. Yes. Zolly should be in control.
Not banned.
He's responsible
be...
for some of their recalls, right?
Exactly.
No, it's true. He holds their feet to the fire. I think they banned him from buying from their store.
They did. He cannot buy from their website.
That's pathetic.
Yeah. Nobody with that name can buy from their site.
But Dr. David Kampling can, right?
Yes, yes.
All right, John, what about you?
Okay. About maybe twice as much as you, Hunter. The Angela Mao Ying double feature.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Like Arrow domestically. I believe if you live in England, I think it's either 88 or Eureka that put this out. But it's got Hapkido and Lady Whirlwind. This is a very rare genre for America. Yakuza film, big time gambling boss. This is from a new label and looks like it's gonna be really interesting. I've never seen this film, and for this genre to get any respect is pretty rare. I think I even brought it up on Christian Toto when he interviewed us for his podcast. I mentioned I was getting into Yakuza films, but they're very hard to come by. And this is hopefully the start of more, you know, that'll happen. And
if they come out here, it's usually like a Kenji Fukasaku film or something.
Or it's some rape fest with our pink.
Yeah, films. Like we get the weird like fetish Yakuza movies that I'll go, ooh, this looks like a Yakuza film. And then I go, oh, no, I don't want to watch this. But is that one with Ken Takakura?
I don't believe he's in this, but it's more in line with those. You know, I haven't watched it yet. I haven't even broken the plastic on it. I just like Chris Pogelli, I think, told me about it. I just like put in a pre-order right away, and you know, we'll see what happens. I'm looking forward to it. It's supposed to have some really good liner notes, and it's actually should be a really nice release. It's not one of the Takakura Ken ones, though. He might have a cameo, but I don't think so. Yeah. The only one of his I've seen is
Sidney Pollack's The Yakuza.
Yeah, that's a bad one. I know. The funny thing is, he made so many movies in Japan as a Yakuza, like starring in these Yakuza films. It's like if you lived in another country and you liked Westerns, but you couldn't get John Wayne Westerns.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how lame it is that we don't have him represented over here. And I've suggested they should get, there's a Japanese box set that has like a bunch of his Yakuza movies on one set. And it's just his face on the box. I said, all we need is a subtitle version of that box set and reasonably price it. And it might be able to get people into the genre. Cause I think it has a lot to offer for, you know, for American video fans or cult movie fans, you know, maybe we'll see something like that one day. Hey, I said, there'll never be a Joseph Quo box set. I mean, we talked to Stu about it and everything. And then like 2 weeks later, they announced Joseph Quo.
That's because John's got insider trading. He just makes it like, oh, I don't know about this stuff. I'm just going to announce it. Oh, yeah. What do you know?
Oh,
here it
what
is.
Do you know?
No way.
What do you know? Look at all these shares I bought. All right, John, sorry.
German DVD import Der Rickshaw Man, which is actually a film that I watched on TV as a kid called Incredible Master Beggars. And it's also known as My 12 Kung Fu Kicks. And it's stars Bruce Lee Yang in his younger days. It's a terrific Kung Fu action comedy. And Bruce Lee Yang, if you've seen Kung Fu Hustle and you remember the toad killer wearing the flip-flops and everything.
Yes.
that's Bruce Liang. And in this film, he wears these kind of like wooden sandal things that he kind of throws his feet in and out of while he's fighting. And I wondered if Stephen Chow made those flip-flops in Kung Fu Hustle a tribute to this movie, but
it's very likely.
Hard to say because we don't get that type of info over here. Also, I went by the archive the other day. That is Vinegar Syndrome's retail store that is actually in Denver, Colorado. Ooh. Or Aurora, technically. And picked up The Invisible Man Appears, the double feature Blu-ray, because it was a reasonably priced $14. I was like, okay.
Nice.
That's great. Everything else was kind of premium, but that's all right.
Did they have Debbie Does Dallas Part 2 in there?
They probably do.
Can you send it to me? I'll fix you up for it.
I see what I can do.
It costs a fortune to get it here. Come on.
What's it called? I've seen Invisible Man Appears. That's a good movie. And I need to watch Invisible Man versus the Human Fly. That's the other one.
That's what I got it for, because I've seen Invisible Man Appears in a bootleg, but when they throw on Human Fly to get us all us bootleg watchers. Because as soon as I bought that bootleg, the curse happened again. Boom, they announced a double feature from Arrow. I was like, oh, great, after I spent my $10 on a bootleg.
Yeah.
Story of my video collecting life.
Mm-hmm.
The right, curse Stu. Of the collector.
It is. It's true. It's absolutely true.
Is that all for you, John?
Yeah, that's it for me.
All right. I will change my background and I will go to how the fuck do I do this? No background. Oh boy. None. Here we go. I apologize. All right. So last week I had Whip Out Your Box. As I told you, I was sectioning everything off because I've got so much. Well, this week I'm going to go into Whip Out Your Books, not your box, Whip Out Your Books. But just tidying up the Whip Out Your Box stuff I had from last week. I forgot a couple. I bought this for $2. This is the Four Films Revenge of the Nerds 1-4 set on DVD. Very happy to get that because that is very hard to find. Last year, I think sometime I mentioned about this Kojak box I bought. Remember?
Oh,
well, that's got all the TV episodes on it, but it doesn't have the 8 films that came along.
Okay. I have that same box set, I think. So,
yep. Yeah, I did find it. All 8 films on 4 discs.
Ooh.
At a thrift store for $1.
Oh, who loves you,
perfect
baby.
Nick. So that is the box section out the way. So now into the books. I'm going to rip through them fast because there's a few because it's been a while. Just got these the other day off the NES. Horrible and Fascinating. John Borman's The Exorcist II, The Heretic Making Of.
Oh, boy.
Looking forward to reading that. It's a bit dark.
That should be interesting. So that movie sucks, but I would read a book about it.
But that's apparently the the final word on just everything about The Exorcist 2. This one's called, it's got no dust jacket at all. It's just called Cinema. It's about adult films. Anthony sent me. These were books I got for free from a guy on Marketplace. Just was giving out DVDs and books in a massive box, which I snagged. This one's called Queen Unseen. My life with the greatest rock band of the 20th century. I think it's done by their tour manager or something. Yep, so there was that. This was another freebie I picked up in that same box. 50 Years of the Rolling Stones.
I've been kind of getting back into the Stones a little bit.
Me too. That mono, I'm going to sound really pretentious now. I was chasing on Marketplace and other stores the Beatles stereo box. It found a couple of people who had them pretty cheap. One was trying to sell a Chinese fake. Yeah, brother, I found that one quick, smart. No thanks. But then just something I read about, and they go, no, if you want those early Beatles, do the mono. You got to listen to the mono. I thought, nah, get out of here. Nah, massive difference. The Beatles and mono stuff is better.
My LPs of Beatles and mono, the value has gone way, way up.
I'd imagine.
Yeah, like if I sold all those on Discogs, I'd make a cool like $500-$600, you know, more than that maybe.
Your next place need to be a palace called Taj Mahanta. That's what it needs to be called. All right, moving on. Pick this up for I think it was $4 at a bookstore. Lemmy by Mick Wall. Looking forward to reading that. Picked up the Aussie classic novelization of Moving Out for $3. This is a hard one to find. Picked this up for a fiver the other day from a lady. Kiss and Makeup by Gene Simmons, which I have read, but I do not own it. I've only got the
I was going to say, I thought you would have read that one by now.
Oh, I have. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I picked these up for at a bookstore, $20. AC/DC album by Martin Popoff. Getting towards the tail end. Another Martin Popoff book, Pink Floyd album by album. That was $15. And finishing up is this one, High Voltage Rock and Roll, the Ultimate Illustrated History of AC/DC. And it's very cool because it's got Angus on the front who spins around.
You make Angus spin around on the ground.
Till he chunders.
Yeah.
Technicolor yawns. And that was included with that Plug Me In box set, went lady. And that's it for books this week. Next week will be... I won't be here next episode. The one after that will be... Whip Out Your Disc. Your disc. Which will be the movies. Then after that will be the CDs. And then I'll be finally all up to date. But that is it for me. So you were asking...
All right, Stu. So losing it.
Yes.
Using it. However the lyrics go.
And abusing it.
Losing it. Because we're losing it. In Tijuana, we're losing it. I think it's
and abusing it south of the border.
Oh, man. Why did you pick this movie? What is
because of fucking rules? That's why I picked it.
So is this like your favorite of this genre or?
No, it's not. My favorite is that. Oh, you can't say it. Revenge of the Nerds is my favorite.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh shit, man. That's
John, do you love Revenge of the Nerds?
It's okay. It's got some
laughs. John strikes me as more of a Revenge of the Nerds 3 guy.
Yeah. No, Nerds 2. He has to be edgy and say, well, yeah, Nerds in Paradise was actually the better film. No, it's not. It's the film that broke my heart in 1987 when it came out.
I went to go to the theater to see Revenge of the Nerds. I am a genuine nerd, and it is a movie about nerds who take revenge on the jocks.
Yeah.
Y'all remember that movie?
Oh, yeah. American Splendor. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
They're not you. That's Hollywood.
That's Hollywood. What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? But they're making money off you.
But I think my three favorites would be Revenge of the Nerds, Porky's, I can watch over and over and over. Losing it would probably be in the top three, but that tends to waver in between comedy and drama, which we'll get into.
Yeah, this one, it's kind of like, I think a few modern movies I would compare it to. One would be like The Hangover, where it's buddies going to cut up and they get into some pretty hairy situations. Another movie it kind of reminded me of, and I think this movie kind of maybe ripped this one off a little bit, but went in a different direction with it, was Y Tu Mamá También. Have any of y'all seen that?
No, I know of it.
But it's like two horny guys go on a road trip with a single, like older single woman in Mexico. But it's not that movie's more of a, you know, art house thing, and it goes, but it has the sex comedy stuff in it, but it has a much weirder conclusion, but the twist is the woman has terminal cancer. That's the twist there. That's what this movie reminded me of. Y Tu Mamá También is much more serious, but it does have that sex comedy element to it.
Well, you know, losing it would have been a little funnier if Shelley Long's character had terminal cancer and they had they didn't have as much technology back then to deal with that. So,
dude, so like Stu, I haven't seen as many of these movies. It's not a genre I grew up with. I in fact, you know, when I was a teenager, I saw the movies that were like, you know, homaging these movies, like American Pie and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, these were before my time, but I've noticed in a few, the few I've seen, there's sort of a cucking of the main character at the end. Like the most egregious example is Last American Virgin.
Oh,
have you seen that one?
Oh yeah.
That
is bizarre.
That movie. Yeah, that movie is a Manosphere. That's like the Citizen Kane of Manosphere.
Yeah, it's like Red Pill, the movie.
Red Pill. Yeah.
Because, yeah, like that movie, like, you know, the dude does all this, you know, stuff for this girl and he pays for her abortion and all that. And then she goes back to the dude who, like, abused her and impregnated her and stuff. And you're like, oh.
It is the most bizarre ending I've seen since 36 Chamber of Shaolin, I think.
It's a remake of an Israeli film. It's part of the Lemon Popsicle.
Yeah, the Lemon Popsicle films. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, same director, too. Same.
Some of those got imported over here during the height of this genre in the early 80s and were given, like, deceptive titles. And I have to imagine the horny slobs going to see these movies and getting this English-dubbed Israeli comedy that's set in Tel Aviv.
They need to release those Lemon Popsicles because they were a bit ahead of their time. Because that was 70s, easily, those things.
Yeah.
I think if they put out a box set of those, people would buy it, I'm sure, just to check it out. You know,
they used to have them in England. England had a box set. And I always thought of getting them just out of curiosity, but never got around to it.
Yeah.
But in this movie, you know, Tom Cruise gets with Shelley Long, but at the end she goes back to her, you know, philandering husband. You know. Yeah.
Yep.
It's got that sort of awe. Too bad, Tom. Too bad, Tom. And then he's like, he's secretly okay with it because he's gay. You know.
And this is pre-Hubbard Tom Cruise as well.
Yeah, this was before he went clear. You know, his thetan was still sullied. That's why he wasn't able to keep Shelley Long. Is because his thetan, he hadn't gone clear yet. He wasn't able to, he wasn't able to ruin Katie Holmes's life yet. Because that's what he would have done to her if he was clear.
You know, it's funny watching this movie. I would have thought Stockwell would be the star out of this film because he's the only one who really. I mean, Jackie Earle Haley is a character actor. I mean, he's got the look of a character actor, but Stockwell I thought would be like a leading man and didn't really happen for him. I know he did some canon films like Dangerously Close, and then he's better known today as a director of like movies involving the water and beaches and surfing. And
That's right.
He never took off, really.
Yeah.
Stockwell, okay.
He did Christine. I know that much.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He was in Christine because I remember watching Christine and the buddy I was watching it with was like, yeah, that guy went on to direct like Blue Crush and Into the Blue. And he's like, if you need like hot chicks and surfing, like he's the guy you go to.
That's your guy.
For a movie. I'm trying
to see. He's in Alpine's Dangerously Close, which I think was like a dangerous high school movie. It's Alpine's.
Oh, I've got that one. Anthony sent me one on Blu-ray. It was actually right. I didn't mind that film.
I've never seen it. It looked pretty good from the ads when I was a kid, but I wasn't old enough to get in to see it. Never got around to it.
Oh, dude. Stockwell directed Kickboxer Vengeance.
Dude. That's recent, too.
And he also did SEAL Team 6, The Raid on Osama Bin Laden. I'll bet it's better than Zero Dark 30.
He's kind of going Asylum level for action flicks, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, the last thing he directed was Armed Response in 2017.
That sounds like another one of those things.
It's got Wesley Snipes, fresh off of the hero dirty. Wesley Snipes, who refused to pay taxes.
Out of prison.
American Wesley hero. Snipes.
Wesley Snipes should do a film with Paul Hogan. Is this called Fuck the Tax Office?
Oh, dude. He also directed Andy Sims' favorite movie, Turistas.
Forgot about that shit.
Andy's rant about that film.
I just remember there was one summer where there was nothing to watch. And he was like, all we get is Turistas.
I saw one of his films in a theater, the one with Alba and the dead guy, Paul Walker, right?
Is it like, Blue
Out of
Crush?
The Blue, in the Blue.
No, that one's got Kate Bosworth.
No.
I actually went to high school with her sister, funnily enough. Into the Blue was Paul Walker and Jessica Alba and Scotty Kahn.
Yeah, saw it at an Elvis cinema for like $2 one night.
Yeah.
Pretty movie. I'll give it that. That's about all I can give it. But, yeah.
But that's what he was like known for, was doing these like cool beach movies. So, like, mm-hmm. you know, but. Oh, he did another one, Dark Tide, with Halle, or was that with Halle Berry? Yeah.
Yeah, I never saw that. I think it went straight to the video.
That's one of those. That's back when, you know, her star faded pretty quick. She did like Monsters Ball, and then she did Catwoman, and it was like, you know.
Yeah.
Well, when you're a bitch,
well,
to
she's
deal
hard
with.
To work with, I
yeah,
probably, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
that, so that doesn't help, you
that'll
know.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
But also, I thought that the top billing of Tom Cruise was strange for this. Yeah. This was his fourth film. Jackie Earle Haley had done four Bad News films, or at least three of them, from memory, and then others in between that.
Yeah, so, he was in a bunch of stuff.
He had buzz on him. I think that's why he got top billing here. Is like there was, I think, as they were making this and then probably doing post on it, suddenly he signed to do Risky Business, and I think other studios were signing him to films right away. They saw something in him, and they were right. But
yeah.
But yeah, he had a buzz on him, I think, in the industry. They know who's going to be a star.
Because they this was filmed in 82, released in 83.
Yeah.
So it was shelved for, I don't know, it was shelved for maybe 6 months or so, and then they rearranged the credits. I dare say the first print credits would have been Tom Cruise, maybe second or third on the listing.
The movie with Jackie Earle Haley I was thinking about that I forgot was Day of the Locust. He was in that.
79? Oh, wow.
That was, where is it? 75.
Oh, wow. Even earlier.
Yeah. That was before Bad News Bears.
It's before Watchmen as well.
Do it. You're stuck in here with me.
Yeah.
It's before the remake of Freddy Krueger. Almost right.
Oh, yeah. That disaster. Not bad casting, just not a good movie.
No.
You know.
Nope.
But
what do you guys think about Shelley Long's character? I mean, I thought she got way too much screen time.
I didn't think she brought much to the table. She's just there for Tom Cruise to have this like coming of age thing with, but there wasn't like the stuff that was just focused on her, I thought was kind of stupid. Like, oh, she goes that like that gets the divorce paperwork, throws the ring in the fountain, and then the guys try to get it. She's like, oh, no. I mean, I think that was to foreshadow that she's not actually going to leave him. But like the stuff with her just wasn't interesting. And really the whole Tom Cruise subplot I thought was dull.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff with Jackie Earle Haley and John Stockwell was much more entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Jackie Earle Haley's constantly getting conned, and you know, he's just so horny that
he's just blinded by trouble. Yeah, the prospect of sex. So he doesn't see the, you know, the forest for the trees, if you will.
Oh, yeah, like he's going to get Spanish Fly and all that, you know. And like, you know, he nearly gets like tortured at a junkyard. And you know, John Stockwell gets into the brawl and goes to Mexican prison. And, you know, that the meme is, if you go to Mexico, do not get into trouble because you don't want to go to Mexican prison. So, you know, of course, he gets thrown in Mexican prison.
Mm.
So, you know, their plots were much more eventful. But Tom Cruise, his plot was just like him talking to this older woman and like finding himself. And, you know, you're not watching this movie for that kind of stuff. You know, it's just.
Yeah,
I mean, it was not that you just want the you need character stuff, but it just wasn't good, you know.
Yeah, what it did was as well was expose the three male leads, as you know, John Stockwell's this, you know, aspired to this sort of Chad guy, but he's really not.
Mm-hmm.
He's he makes out like he's, you know, he gets all the chicks, and he really doesn't. Tom Cruise is, you know, oh yeah, I'm gonna go to Mexico and get laid and. His opportunity, he doesn't do it. We don't even know if he did it with Shelley Long's Kathy character at all.
Mm-hmm.
We see it implied, but we don't really know. So we don't know if he's doing it because he's trying to save himself for the girl back home who's trying to save herself a marriage. And yeah. So at least two of the main characters got exposed as being not who they really are. But yeah. For me, the first 40 minutes of this film is very, very funny. There's the midsection, probably about 20 minutes where it drags a little, which is the whole subplot with Shelley Long and her sort of interactions. It's pretty much after they go to, and I need, I dare say probably John will be able to help me out with this one. It's after they go to that Tungale nightclub with that dirty comic on the piano, John Velby.
Yeah, he's doing all the kind of like Hustler magazine type jokes.
Yeah. John, what do you know about him?
I don't know anything about him. I thought maybe I recognized him from somewhere, and maybe I saw him on in some TV show in the 80s. I just don't know anything about him. Yeah. I meant to look deeper to see if maybe he was supposed to be an up-and-coming big star.
No, he's not an actor. He does the nightclub circuit and just does he goes by Dr. Dirty as well on some of his albums. Yeah. But
just seems like a character from the movie The People versus Larry Flint.
If you look up him on YouTube and some of his songs, if you want political correctness, don't watch him, because he, I mean, the songs are funny shit. That song he made about Obamacare was, oh my God, I was on the fucking floor. Gosh. Yeah.
I do think, you know, like that stuff in the brothel, like, you know, there's the comedy stuff, but yeah, that part kind of drags for me, and all the stuff with Tom Cruise kind of drags, but you know, stuff with Jackie Earle Haley and John Stockwell really moves, I think. So
I like Wendell as well, the character of Wendell was just you know, a real hustler. It's basically, you want to go to Mexico, to Tijuana, well, I'm paying, so I'm coming. I'm going to go score all these cherry bombs and firecrackers and sell them when I get back. And that him at the start in the school selling the copy of, you know, his Shakespeare homework, obviously references back to Rock and Roll High School with...
Eagle Bauer.
Because
that character doesn't exist in real life at all.
Yeah,
never.
Yeah, of course not. It's a magical character. Yeah. The kid who knows more than it. Like, he recognizes the con with the guy selling the watch. And his brother falls for the con every time, you know, and every time he's like, ah, that's the Spanish Fly is not real. Oh, that watch. Oh, yeah. Oh, solid gold, right?
Magical thing junior I noticed, high though, school kid. Is that the thing? Magical high school kid or magical?
Yeah. Oh, that was an 80s trope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the kid who could get you whatever you wanted, you know.
Wise beyond his years.
Yes. Offers the football player advice on what he should do to get with Riff Randall.
Yeah.
Oh, you want PJ Souls here? You talk to me.
You go talk to Clint Howard.
Yeah, Clint Howard, man. Perfect for that kind of role. Perfect.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Wow. But I mean, this fell into the same sort of, you know, well of films that came out around then. There was Up the Creek was in 83, same sort of thing. What else is Hot Dog the Movie? There was just all those films. It was just an absolute glut of them that came out. And they all had the same sort of story, just a different setting. You know, Up the Creek was out literally in the woods with the creek. This one in Tijuana. I saw at the end it said filmed in Cala, Mexico. What is that? Cali, Mexico.
Not sure. I don't spend
Calexico, California.
Yeah,
it's probably just a border town.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's situated on the Mexican border, so you can make it look enough like Tijuana, probably.
Okay.
Well, and like, back in those days, Tijuana was sort of like the California, people who grew up in California, that was the place where you could go drink underage, and that was a
watch
place
a donkey show.
Yeah, that was a place for teenagers to go party, and like, you know, they could go see strippers and drink, get drunk and stuff. Like, Adam Carolla talks about that, like, you know, planning weekends in Tijuana for just degeneracy, you know.
Have you guys been there at all?
Fired everybody on staff who listened.
Never been? John, never been?
No, I've never been to Tijuana.
Never been.
That's over in the, is it, it's, that's over on the other side, you know. Being from Texas, I've been to Matamoros. I've been to Mexico City. I've been to Cuernavaca. I've been to Taxco.
So you've been to Mexico. You've been to Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah. These are all the places I've been in Mexico.
Okay.
These are all cities. I've been to Acapulco.
Did you have fun there?
Yeah, you know, I did. I learned a lot there. I really enjoyed. And San Miguel de Allende, which is where they shot, Robert Rodriguez shot Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Oh, okay.
And I saw the movie right after I went there. And I remember that bar, Johnny Depp and Danny Trejo are in. Mm. I remember being in that place, you know, and I had just been there. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it was pretty wild seeing all those locations where I'd just been. But yeah, no, I've been all over Mexico, but I've never been to the Baja or the kind of California side of Mexico.
Okay. Yeah. I've often thought about what it'd be like, but this film doesn't actually paint it as a very good sort of tourist attraction, even though it's not.
Well, let me tell
you,
if you go to Mexico, don't go to border towns. Border towns are absolute hellscape places. Like, you know, I went to Matamoros. That's a border town. That place sucks.
I've heard Tijuana sucks. I've heard it's a shithole.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The border towns are just, they're all like, you know, the town in, Orson Welles's Touch of Evil. Like, they're all just corrupt and nasty and gross. But if you go further into Mexico, you go to like, you know, Cuernavaca or San Miguel de Allende, some of the Spanish colonial towns, those have some really nice stuff, nice things to see. There's also the really touristy places like Acapulco and Cabo.
I was going to say, you see Sammy Hagar
over in Cabo. Yeah, those are very, like, those cater to Western tourists. I mean, those cater to American tourists, Western, you know.
Yeah.
But they cater to American tourists. And so you don't really get old Mexico, like Spanish colonial Mexico is what I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to some of the Aztec cities, too, back when you could still climb the pyramids, you know.
Didn't John Romano live in San Miguel for a while?
I think so.
For like 5 or 6 years. He's like, you can buy steroids at the drugstore.
And they never hurt anybody. Nobody ever died from
steroids. Show me the bodies. Show me the bodies.
Speaking of, one of the funnier scenes in this movie is when he tries to buy Spanish fly at the pharmacy and he's trying to pantomime it and the guy just gets out a shotgun.
Well, I did hear that during the pandemic of several years ago, you could buy hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin at the airports in Mexico.
Wow.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Really?
They weren't holding back on that. They were like, they allowed you to buy that anywhere.
Well, and I knew a lot of people who left the United States during the pandemic, went to Mexico just because there was more freedom there.
Yeah.
They didn't have all the lockdowns. There were some, you know, I had friends who'd say occasionally you'd encounter like somebody paranoid about masks on a bus or something, but I had friends who just were like, you know, I don't want to be in the U.S. I'm just going to ride this out in Mexico. You know, they just left the country to go, you know, hang out there because you could kind of live as you
kind of go to Mexico these days to buy eggs, right, at a reasonable price.
Well, we go to Mexico to buy eggs, infant Tylenol. You know?
Oh my god.
All that True. Stuff that you can't get.
Now. How much is it going for a dozen eggs? My wife was saying $20 ago. That's ridiculous. It's not 20.
No, I bought a dozen of eggs for, you know, $6 the other day.
It's about $7 here. $6 if you find a good deal. Yeah. Which is still too much, but you know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they're more expensive for sure. But
they're only $3.50 here for a dozen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, at Costco, they didn't have any for weeks, and I went today to get some diapers, and I saw a lot of eggs. So I was like, oh, okay, they've got eggs back in, so maybe it's easy.
But no diapers. So when you want eggs, they got diapers. When you want diapers, they got eggs.
Costco's weird, man. Sometimes, you know, they carry this thing I get all the time, and then it'll vanish for months, then it comes back.
It's odd. I mean, I rarely shop there. We've got a membership. We've had it for years, and we always keep it going. But, yeah, it's odd. But anyway, this is the first time you've seen Losing It, Hunter. I don't know about John. I think Desai would have been the first time as well.
Oh, John has seen every movie listed in Teen Movie Hell.
Yeah.
John.
I don't even know the book. I don't even own it. I saw like the second half of Losing It on HBO, probably in like 85 or 86.
Mm-hmm.
And did James Elroy where all the, have there was have an there was no nudity. It was all violence. It was like all the violence parts of the movie that
yeah.
I think that's what Curtis Hanson really wanted to film anyway. I think he wanted to film like fights and, you know, hanging Jackie Earl Haley on the hook and.
Mm-hmm.
You
know,
I think he saw this as an opportunity to gun for a different kind of movie.
Yeah.
You know,
he wanted to do the touch of evil of horny teen comedies.
Yeah, that's the log line, the touch of evil of horny teen comedies.
Even the brothel is like got the neon lighting and stuff, kind of like the hotel in Touch of Evil.
They just needed Zsa Zsa Gabor to show up as a hooker somewhere. But yeah, the corrupt cop, he's a little bit like Orson Welles, but he kind of looks like Charlton Heston's Mexican cop too.
He does. Yeah, he does.
Yeah, Curtis Hanson used to write for like a Film Buff magazine, I think, when he was working for Corman in like the late 60s. So it's like, it's all there. You could see it all. He has Henry Darrow looking like you say, like kind of like Orson Welles, as much as you can make Henry Darrow look like Orson Welles. But
he's got a little bit of Welles Heston too, I think, like with the
The mustache and everything. So it was like, why'd you in your face? You want to do it like a medley of those things.
I love it when he goes, "Why'd you arrest him?" "Cause he pissed me off."
But that's probably true. It just takes to piss off a cop, and then you're in the slam for years on end.
Oh, and what I love is there's kind of this, when someone offers him a bribe, there's like, "Are you saying I would take a bribe because I'm Mexican?" And then later on, he's like, "Yeah, I'll take a bribe. Give me the car.
Give me the car." Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay.
And we got a cameo by Joe Spinell.
Yes, we did, as the border guard.
Yes. That guy, I just tend to get lost in the mix. They say that Joe Spinell died in, what was it, 83 or 84?
Yeah, it was one of those years. Yeah.
But he just seemed to keep cropping up in movies 3 or 4 years after he died somehow. I don't know.
I did a lot of stuff that was shelved, like Little Dragons, the previous Curtis Hanson film before Losing It. Right. Joe Spinell's in that, and that was filmed, I think, in 78, but not really released till 1980 or 81. So, and then it was re-released and... a couple of years later on home video to cash in on the Karate Kid. So, but Spinell's in that thing. So I think he was friends with Curtis Hanson, if anything.
I just remember being so taken aback because I knew who Spinell was because of Rocky. You know, he was Gazzo in Rocky.
But not Maniac.
Well, I always saw the poster for Maniac, and it's this leather jacket guy with a chick's head and a knife. And it was always just a thing I saw at the video store. But when I finally watch it, it's Gazzo from Rocky, and it's his movie. Like, he wrote it, and I just went, "Wait, what?" I was so confused. Like, I thought it was going to be John Stockwell cutting girls' heads off based on the poster, because it's this dude with leather jacket and like,
yeah.
And then it's fat greaseball Joe Spinell, mob leg breaker Joe Spinell.
Like, Carolyn Monroe is attracted to him. It's like,
yeah, no, that's never going to happen.
Lustig directed that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Lustig directed that. Savini did all the special effects and probably
posed in that jacket. Because that was the big thing was, Savini. Anytime Savini pops up, it's like, oh, Savini did the special effects. My favorite was, like, a few years ago, Corey Taylor was like, my new mask has been done by Tom Savini. And it looked like Tom Savini cut a milk jug in half and put it on his face. Like, it looked horrible.
Yeah, he got by on his rep in later years, I think.
Oh, I was going, Corey, everybody was going, "Corey, you were robbed by this man. This man took advantage of you." And
yeah.
Corey Taylor was like, "Oh, I love that it pisses everyone else off." And then a few years later, he was like, "Yeah, that mask was pretty bad." You know, like, he copped to it that it wasn't any, it was not good.
Joe Spinell was in Godfather 2. And here's a fun fact. Right. He was the second highest paid person in Godfather 2.
Behind Who was
Francis Coppola.
Really?
Yeah.
Morgan Pacino?
No. Because what Spinell did was he told Coppola, it's in the book I've got, The Godfather Companion, that he told Coppola at the start, "I want to learn how to be a director." And Coppola just, "Yeah, come with me." come with me every day and just learn. So Spinell was signing on, getting paid for it every day. And eventually wound up being the second highest paid person on that film. Not as an actor.
Yeah, a couple of liked him. So a couple of liked him.
Well, it's those Italians, you know, it's that ethnic nepotism, you know?
Well, it's funny. Stallone says he could not get on the set. He was trying to get a gig as an extra on The Godfather. And he said, he says the casting director said, "You don't look Italian enough."
Oh, my God.
Really? He's like, "What are you talking about?
Hey, what are you talking about? I'm Sly Stallone.
I look like I'm made of vowels. Come on."
They get Jewish James Caan. They're playing Italian.
Really. Oh my gosh.
But they did it with the Lords of Flatbush as well. They had an Italian gang with Henry Winkler, who is not Italian.
I feel like
Perry King.
Those are two ethnic groups that get swapped a lot. It's like Robert De Niro and Casino, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wanderers as well, with Ken Wall as an Italian. He's not Italian.
What about Warren Beatty as Bugsy Siegel?
Yeah. I like the film a lot, actually. Quite a bit.
Yeah, I need to watch that one. I have the DVD. It's written by pickup artist James Toback.
No, there you go. That's right.
Just going
and it shows, believe me, it shows, Hunter. It shows in the film.
Cornering people with that sweaty printout of his IMDb page. Look, I'm a Hollywood big shot. Come to my apartment.
That has to be a joke. That cannot be real.
It's even known pervert James Gunn was like, "James Toback is a bad guy." He was like,
I've
had
been warning
girls about him for years.
In as much trouble. If he looked like Alain Delon, would he have been in as much trouble? I don't know.
No. If he looked like Warren Beatty, he would not be in as much trouble. You know?
Right.
Like, Beatty kind of got canceled. Somebody tried to cancel him recently, and people were like, you know.
Yeah, he got laughed off pretty much. Yeah.
He's like, who cares? I'm 80-something.
He tried to do it to Stallone a few years ago, and it was like a fairy tale, you know, harassment thing or whatever.
Mm.
Now, listen, I was with Warren one night. He was a perfect gentleman to those girls.
Yeah.
My Benza needs work.
Oh, God, Benza. AJ Benza. All right. Anyway, moving on with Losing It. Yeah. The only thing I think is wrong with this is it's probably about 15 minutes too long.
Yeah. It's
1:40, and it could have been just trimmed back just a fraction.
Cut down that baggy second act a lot. Mm.
Yeah. But for me, they just don't
do too much with the Shelley Long plot. It's just there for the idealistic young man to learn a lesson, you know, that he's gay.
So that
should have been more out and about with that, literally.
Yeah,
that would have made it more memorable.
Sure. So, do they remake Losing It with Tom Cruise again and David Miscavige?
It's the 1980s, and he goes to Tijuana.
They go to Mexico with Shelley Miscavige.
If they can find her.
she gets killed. They have to cover it up.
It'd be like Weekend at Shelley's. She's dead, but they just drop in the back of the car. Oh
my gosh.
They go to Clearwater looking for Mark Rinder.
Problem is, there's like stories from Mexico in recent years that make anything in this film seem really tame and almost Disney-ish compared to what I've heard. That, like, did you ever hear the story about the cartels? There was like a young couple jet skiing, and the cartels rode by in a speedboat and killed the husband, and the wife escaped on a jet ski.
Like,
the cops didn't believe her. They thought she'd set up her husband to die or whatever, and she was insisting. It was like, no, it was terrible, you know. It was horrifying and all this.
Yeah, the cartels, they've gotten really bold because they used to not touch the tourist areas because they were like, we understand that's bad for business. But lately you see more and more stories about, like, you know, shootings at tourist hotels and, you know, headless bodies showing up on the beach at these family places, you know, just really ghoulish stuff. And, you know, and yeah, yeah. I'll tell you guys a story actually off the episode. I don't want to tell it on the show.
Mm-hmm. Too blue for YouTube.
Yeah, it's just it's a personal story of a friend, and if Oof. You know if he saw it, it would he would be like, why'd you do that? So
yeah.
But
I know Cuba's got a policy as well. If tourists get hurt or killed or something, the jail sentence is like instant life or something for the.
Well, that's because they don't want you to kill Michael Moore and you know. Blow the lid on the whole Cuba's a paradise thing. Yeah, they want tourists to think Cuba's utopia.
I saw a tourist video of Cuba. The place looks like it's 1950s. I mean, it looks literally 70 years behind everybody else.
Well, and that's one reason is they have the same cars from back
then. Yeah, like they pretty much
the same cars going. So you see all these old classic cars that are still running, that they've just kept going. Because they don't have anything new there.
Mm. Yeah.
Even post-Castro. Also, okay, another thing in this movie. I've never heard the urban legend about stuffing your car.
With horseshit.
What is that, an urban legend? I've never heard that before.
I never heard it.
No.
John, you never encountered that? You never had your... You never showed up.
Not in my readings of urban legends and Mexico scare stories. Never
heard
of that.
That's so specific, though. That makes me think it's made up for the movie. Like,
or it happened to B.W.L. Norton or whatever.
Could be.
When he was palling around with Johnny Legend and they were going down to Tijuana or something.
It happened when I was writing the movie Convoy.
Yeah.
We went through Tijuana and I got my car worked on.
Well, this film is set. Isn't this film set in 64 or 65? It's not specific. 65. But it's 65, is it?
Yeah.
We were still feeling the effect. I mean, the guy wrote more American Graffiti, but we were still feeling the effects of American Graffiti with the kind of boomer teenage nostalgia there.
Yeah. I wondered if it was a failed pitch. If it was a failed pitch for like More American Graffiti or American Graffiti 3. Like, it's possible that it could have been intended. And they were like, no, it's too sleazy and dark or weird or whatever.
George Lucas was like, BWL, I don't think this works. It's not like poetry. It doesn't rhyme, you know.
Well, because also they always like a cheap, the lower budget pitch. Okay, if we only gave you $500,000 to do it, what would you do? And he probably came up with this story. You know, because like Splinter in the Mind's Eye was based on, you know, that paperback of Star Wars was based on, okay, if Star Wars is a moderate hit and we get a cheap sequel, this is going to be the sequel, Splinter in the Mind's Eye. But if we get like, if it makes a lot of money and we think it's gonna make a lot of money, Lee Brackett has this Empire Strikes Back story and we're gonna go with that. So
yeah,
you know, and they did that back then. They probably still do it today.
What's the Kurosawa film that Star Wars is sort of loosely based on?
What's the samurai film?
Hidden Fortress.
Hidden Fortress. Oh, okay.
Hidden Fortress.
Okay.
Yes. It's got like two farmers instead of two robots, and it's got a princess.
There's a princess and a samurai warrior, and there's a scarred villain.
Yeah.
They're going through enemy territory, and you know, it's all there.
All right.
Anything else to say about Losing It? Have we covered it all?
I haven't really covered it all, but it's a pretty straightforward film.
Yeah, John's a huge fan of these kinds of movies. He loves sex comedies.
Yeah, not my favorite genre. I
don't like
him.
I
don't care for him, but there's a few that I think are okay, like because they kind of live up to their billing. Like Private School is one that actually kind of lives up to its.
Actually, McPadden did a commentary for that one.
Did he do that one?
Oh yeah, he did a commentary for Private School.
I don't want to offend anybody. Because I'm woke now.
I hope none of y'all dig up my old writings.
Yeah, don't ever buy a zine called Happy Land. It's not me.
I am a political atheist.
Yes, I don't stick for each side. Yes, vote for Biden. Look,
that guy was so scared. You know, right? You know, R.I.P. But he was so scared of getting canceled. So scared. Like, he's one of those guys who clearly was an edgelord and was hoping nobody, like, was terrified that people would find out.
Yeah.
Fucking idiot. But yeah, he's on the Private School commentary. That was one of the That was one. That was not too long before he died. He put that.
Yeah, but that one has good looking girls and really lives up to its R-ratedness and kind of gives like a horny teen everything he wants to see. A lot of these movies did always fell short. They were almost like I don't know. They were just teases. They didn't really fulfill anything. And I think one reason the genre was really big in the early 80s is because like the you couldn't show porns in mainstream theaters anymore. And porno theaters had become sort of a thing for pervs, like the raincoat crowd. It wasn't like couples and college students. Like
it wasn't Travis Bickle and Sybil Shepherd.
Yeah, it wasn't like what's implied. And so if you read things like cult movies when they talk about Deep Throat, oh,
couples going to see Deep Throat. Yeah, all that sort of
stuff.
Yeah,
we weren't in Devil that Miss time Jones. Anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And so the potential market you would have grabbed that, which is basically 17, 18-year-old teenage boys, they would want to go see this stuff, but they didn't want to be caught dead at a porno theater. So they would go see these teen flicks with the hope of getting some nudity and getting
That's
their type
Dick
of humor.
Patton
or whatever.
Said. He said yeah. It was that was the sort. I listened to him on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast because he worked with that show. And when he put out Teen Movie Hell, they had him on to talk about it. And he basically said, you know, it was the outlet for that sort of thing. And, but it was interesting though. He said that the thing that killed these movies was John Hughes movies. That was his claim. He said that John Hughes found a way to kind of Cadillac this sort of thing and make it palatable to, mainstream America.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was like, I kind of took out all the, it, you know, like those early John Hughes movies, they are kind of in this wheelhouse, like Weird Science and stuff like that. But then, you know, but he was like, but this sort of made it more mainstream and it sort of killed. It gave Hollywood the formula for how to do this kind of thing. And it edges out the sort of sleazy indie stuff, you know.
Well, I'd rather watch Losing It than The Breakfast Club any day.
Well, I think he's partially right, but like he would blame everything on Star Wars and John Hughes and his daily Facebook rantings. But
yeah,
the truth is, I think it's just like the slasher movies. I think the market was so glutted that eventually you can only release so many bad ones before people just turn on the genre altogether. And then when you could watch them on HBO, why would you go see them in a theater and go through that hassle?
It had a resurgence in the late 90s, the whole teen sex comedy thing. There was a glut of those, and I mean I think they were worse than what the ones in the 80s were by
and the ones in the late 90s too, like American Pie. You had those and then they kind of degenerated into direct to video stuff, like when DVD came around, all that stuff was going direct to DVD, and it was like it was almost like shameful to rent or buy anything like that. Like, you know, you'd see it and you go, who would touch that? Oh, and look at Eugene Levy on the cover, like that poor guy.
Yeah,
you
that
know?
Poor sap. He's just I think you had obviously the, you know, the horror remakes through the early 2000s. Then you had the parody films of the early 2000s. It was just
Those killed. Those Friedberg Seltzer movies killed the parody film. Like that parody films were killed dead by those pieces of crap.
That worst one was the Not Another Superhero Movie. Jesus Christ, that was one of the worst.
Oh, no, yeah. I think it was just terrible. Called Superhero Movie.
Oh, was it called Superhero Movie?
Yeah, it was called Not Another Teen Movie.
Oh, I don't know. That was just, it was
Not Another Teen Movie, I thought was funny. That
Superhero,
that's one of the few.
Yeah, yeah. Superhero Movie was just, God, was just awful.
Yeah.
When they're making fun of Stephen Hawking for laughs, I thought, this is just stupid.
Well, like any of the ones directed by Aaron Seltzer and Jason Friedberg, that they're the ones who theirs are bereft of humor. Their stuff is just reference.
That's all it was.
No jokes.
Nope.
Just references. And hey, we just referenced 300. Isn't that funny? Hey, we just referenced the guy saying "Leave Britney alone." Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
You know.
So it's Family Guy. It's the South Park.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the live action Family Guy.
Yeah. It is the manatees just putting pop culture references
actually there was one called Plump Fiction, which had a fat woman in the same
that was a direct-to-video one.
Oh Jesus,
Silence of the Hams.
Yeah, I just thought
that was made by the same people.
Fucking awful.
Do you remember the thumb ones, like Thumb Wars?
Oh yeah, yeah,
you know,
Godfather one they had as well, like
Yeah, the God Thumb.
The God Thumb, that's it, yeah.
Yeah.
Stupid.
There was also Thumbtanic.
That's it, yeah, yeah. They were just stupid.
I think Steve Odenkirk did those. I think that was the guy who did Kung Pao, Enter the Fist.
So was Broken Lizard trying to attempt to bring it back sort of respectfully, like more intellectual youth comedies or something?
Yeah, I think they were trying to do it like, we're a comedy group, we're a brand, you know, you have these dudes, and we're going to do like the cop movie, the 70s cop movie. We're going to do like Chips or whatever.
They do Beer Fest? Was that them?
Yeah, they did Beer Fest. Yeah.
Beer Fest I enjoyed, actually.
You know, Club Dread was like their take on the slasher movie.
Mm.
I thought that was okay. I enjoyed that. All right. Decent enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jay Chandrasekhar is the director.
Mm. Yeah, they made the letdown of Dukes of Hazzard, which was like, should have been so much better.
Yeah, that he directed that.
That was bad. That was bad.
But...
And the Starsky and Hutch movie was just atrocious.
That was Todd Phillips.
Oh, wow, really?
Boy. That wasn't Jay. But Jay, Chandrasekhar, he did the bit in Jackass number 2 where they get Dave England and dress him up like a terrorist to hail a cab and act like he's going to go blow up a plane. But Jay is driving the cab and he pulls a gun on him and stuffs him in the trunk. Like, it's the guy who's playing the prank gets pranked. It's just like, oh my gosh, it was just like a layers upon layers of gags. It was funny.
If you want a bigger laugh, go back, see if you can trace the Paramount Twitter, not Paramount Twitter or whatever.
Garrow's Paramount.
Fake Paramount.
Yeah. Go back to the time when Jackass 3D came out to try to look up his tweets from then. Because I mean he had me fall out laughing. This is like, God, what, 11 years ago? I don't know. It was a long
time ago. That was a while ago.
Man, Garrow had some great ones from that era. If you can trace them back, if you can go back that far and deep dive into Twitter.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, he had some. They were probably funnier than anything in the movies themselves. So.
And Fake Paramount, I still attest, gave us Anchorman 2. As much as he says it wasn't, I think he had a bit of a hand in that one, getting Anchorman 2. Oh,
possibly. Got a little industry buzz going.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, we want to rate Losing It.
Yeah, let's rate it.
All right.
John, what would you give it?
I give it. Probably like a Tress 3.
A 3?
Yeah. I just thought the problem is when I watch these movies, and like I watch Hot Dog the movie and I thought it was terrible because I found it in a
shame on you.
Surely this is funny. And yeah. It's not.
These
movies are made by people who are not funny. They don't know how to write jokes. They don't know how to set up gags. They don't. I would sit there watching Hot Dog the movie and I would just like start doing all these double entendre jokes about skiing and screwing and all that stuff. And it was funnier than anything in the damn movie. Then I watched the trailer on the DVD. The trailer was way funnier than the movie because it had all those jokes. And it's just like, good Lord. I think the problem is, it's kind of like I said about, I think a filmmaker a while back, Rob Zombie with the Munsters movie, bring comedians in to punch this stuff up with jokes and gags. It's like this movie's a little strange. It's like violent and it's kind of like, I mean, it's not really big on the nudity. I mean, there's some good looking girls in here, but there's not much going on for that. If you were watching it for that, you're going to be really disappointed. But they needed script doctors. I don't know if they had them back then to just come in and just add jokes to the damn thing. It's like, it's a comedy, right? I mean, that's what I saw the trailers when I was a kid going to the theater. You'd see a trailer for Losing It in like 1983, and I was just like, gee, that must be funny. But then they're not really that funny. None of these films are actually all that hilarious. It's strange. It's, I mean, good Lord, couldn't they just hire Gilbert Gottfried to come
put some jokes on these things?
Gilbert would have done it too. He loves this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's like there's so many comedians I could have just brought in. Go to the damn improv, what are the Hollywood comedy clubs? Just go hire those guys. Hey, I'll give you $200. Add some jokes to this script, man. Come on. You know, we don't have enough jokes here. I don't think Curtis Harrington was not really Hanson. A really funny guy. Yeah, Hanson. He wasn't a funny guy. I don't think he was that funny. There's jokes in LA Confidential that don't really land when they have him in there. Like, we haven't talked about that. But by the way, James Ulrich, not a huge fan of LA Confidential. Believe it or not. He said Curtis made a studio film. He said he made a studio film the studios wanted. And because he said, you got these cops in LA, white cops arresting black criminals, suspects, and they never utter a single racial slur. He said, Curtis made very safe studio films. So I have a feeling, I have to wonder if maybe there's some compromise when they made this. Maybe the script was raunchier and they were like, no, you can't put that in there because people in Kansas will be mad at us or something, you know. Or no, Mexico will be really angry at us.
All right, so I found a fake Paramount Jackass 3D. So he says,
share it.
With the $50 million opening weekend, our Jackass 3D has a chance to beat The Birdcage as the highest grossing gay themed film. Thanks, America.
I see Garrow's post. I think, how is he still there? He must have photos of somebody at Facebook, because I tell you, how he's still on there without any sort of recrimination is beyond me.
Yeah.
What's so funny is Armand White is a huge fan of Garrow's Facebook post.
Oh, bitch.
Yes, of course.
And he quoted him in a recent review of that George yes, Miller movie.
Did.
It's like Garrow's quoted in the National Review.
As he should be.
So for losing it, I'm going to rate it a 2.5. It's got some entertaining stuff in it, but these really aren't my kind of movies. I didn't grow up with these sort of things, so I don't have any nostalgia for them. But I see what you're enjoying.
What about all the nudity, Hunter?
Stu, what about you? 10 out of 10?
No, it's not a 10 out of 10. That's silly.
It's an 11. Good Lord.
No,
Hunter.
It's not an 11 either. It's not that. Well, I got one bozo giving it a 3, one giving it a 2.5. I'm giving this a 9.
Wait, you gave it a 3, John? I thought you gave it a
3.
No, you gave it a 3.
Oh, you gave it a 3. Okay. Oh, did I say 2.5? I meant a 5. I'm sorry. I meant 2.5 stars. 5. 5 is what I meant.
Okay.
How do you get 2.5 and 5 mixed up?
Because when I do a 5, when I do on Letterboxd, 2.5 is a 5.
Okay.
2.5 stars.
Yeah. All right.
Sorry. I know that's confusing.
I was going to say.
I apologize. I give it a 5.
Right. It's better. All right. I'm giving it a 9.
Wow.
Would you expect anything less than that, really?
Maybe an 8.
No, not happening. I'll give Hot Dog the Movie an 8.
Okay.
And that's one of the lesser ones.
The trailer gets an 8. The movie itself, I mean,
I love these films. I don't care. I love these films. I love them. I can watch them. Like, Nerds will be a 10. If you ever do Revenge of the Turd, Revenge of the Nerds, you got me so upset.
Revenge of the Turd. Wrong.
That's the Howard Stern produced version.
No, that's the second one.
His name is Booger.
If I ever do Revenge of the Nerds, it's going to get an instant 10. So I'm just spoiling what my rating would be.
Well, I have friends who love these films, and they'll like stuff like Jocks and, you know, Meatballs, Screwballs, whatever the hell, you know. But
Meatballs
it's just like
3 with Corey Feldman.
No, oh,
yes, Meatballs 3 with Corey Feldman.
Pretty
Meatballs
sure
2,
Meatballs 3.
King Frat. I don't know. There's just
That is an exception to the rule. That was freaking awful.
You should go. You should go get a copy of Teen Movie Hell, Stu. It's right up your alley.
I probably got it.
Yeah, it sounds familiar.
I think I've got it.
Yeah, that's Mike's book.
Okay.
The Bible of these sort of movies.
Which he rewrote when Me Too happened. Apparently he rewrote most of the book.
Yeah, he got so scared.
Oh, no, I bought this way, way, way before that.
Okay.
So
probably not. This book is fairly recent. It came out just a few years ago.
Came out and then he died. So
yeah.
Okay, then yep. That's something else I've got then that I'm thinking of. But yeah.
All right. Well, just to wrap things up, does anybody have anything to plug?
No, I won't be here next episode, so you boys have got something else planned because I'm away got with it. The fam on holidays.
So, if you would like to leave us a Ko-Fi donation, be sure to hit that button. Any little bit helps cover the costs
mm-hmm.
of doing the show. We appreciate any little tip you want to give us.
Oh, before you do that, I thought I'd better show my t-shirt. I've had it for 27 years, but
is that Freely's Comet?
Freely's Comet.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
And you know who nice. Signed them?
Ah.
Hey, you know I signed Freely's Comet. You know I signed Ace Freely for the Trouble Rockin' record. To make a four.
He came to my cubicle. He came to my cubicle in front of everybody. I said, Ace, look, it's Ace Freely.
Ace, who's a dear friend.
Dear friend, yeah.
Once a month.
He always says that, who's a dear friend.
Peter Chris, who's a dear friend. When was the last time you spoke to him? Oh, well, we're busy. We got schedules, you know. Yeah, so.
He's like that reporter from Death Race 2000. She said, like President Frankenstein, a dear friend of mine. You know, that's yeah.
He's the real Don Steele.
He's Trunkenstein.
Yeah, I think she was based on like Rona Barrett. She had like the bleached hair or whatever, but yeah.
All right, guys. Well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
Peace out.
And now it's time for Rue Britannia with your foreign correspondent, the Nez.
Meme that will surprise nobody other than those who buy gold on the basis of advice from William Devane, ex-actor Kevin Spacey faced court again this week in London to answer a new set of criminal charges, consisting of 3 counts of indecent assault, 3 counts of sexual assault, and 1 count of causing a person to engage in sexual activity without consent. All of this between 2001 and 2005. This on top of the existing 5 allegations of physical and sexual assault. He's been busy. Thankfully, given his upcoming criminal trial, Kevin's CV does tend to lend itself to his current plight. Paid it forward. Gold member. Ordinary decent criminal. Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. A Time to Rape. Swimming with Sharks. Non-consenting adults. See no evil, hear no evil. The Usual Suspect. And my personal favourite, Beyond the Seaman. The quality of London's dungeons hasn't really all that much improved since the days of Stacey Keach's jail term. Though, since Spacey is gay, a conviction for that type of thing will probably almost certainly be the happiest thing to happen in his life. Entertainment. And the new season of ITV Village Idiot Festival Love Island got underway this week. 4 days in, and so far not one single cast member or presenter has actually managed to commit suicide. A record for the show. Presumably one reason why there's no ratings for this year are down. For the record, Love Island's reputation for its increasing suicide rate as even by the low standards of ITV, absolutely startling. Both presenters and contestants have had a tendency to commit suicide since the show was instigated, though one actually wonders just why the show isn't actually set in Venice, the suicide capital of Europe. Anyway, here's wishing this season's contestants all the best. The Usual Suspects apply. Hank Studd, Dolly Bird, Plastic Mac, Terry Balls, Una Hoon, Mensa Mike, Ron Jeremy?! Woke, and as the Jacobean reign of terror continues, Labour Party leader Keir Starmer had a bucket of the stuff that makes the roses grow in Texas thrown over his head when trans protesters demonstrating outside Downing Street accused Captain Underpants of eating shit. Metaphorically, of course. This in response to the government's decision to effectively block Scotland's transgender bill. All very awkward for him, although the Tories are discreet about their support for transgenders in general. Starmer, as usual, has been both for and against the policy and issue, which is to say, caught between the idea of the focus group and the passing bandwagon of the day. Which is why Starmer basically stated a year ago that men have cervixes and women have testicles. Don't laugh. Also the reason as to why he regularly dodges the question whenever it comes up in the media. All very self-inflicted indeed. Indeed, if anything, one wonders if the issue of transams will pop up as an issue at the next general election in 18 months' time. God's truth. Further notes in passing, ITV launched their new season of Dancing on Ice, complete with collapsed ratings, BLM fist raisers, and a bunch of coordinated has-beens. Why the network just simply doesn't call it ice skating with rejects is a mystery. A 13-year-old boy is stabbed outside a branch of McDonald's in Birmingham. I'd imagine actually being stabbed outside McDonald's is preferable to the idea of actually eating anything from McDonald's. And finally, Boris Johnson, when not signing a book deal with HarperCollins this week for a very undisclosed fee, was formally made a citizen of the Ukrainian capital, Kiev. Quote unquote, I'm very honoured to receive this award, said the failed climate change junkie and liar, he piped. Indeed, I can't wait to visit the bombed-out tractor factory and grain silo so I can fully appreciate the joy of my failed war, he gleamed. Some things still never change, which is to say he's still somewhat of a...
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.